The Diner is brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio information and entertainment. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Go to audiblepodcast.com/thediner and get a free audiobook and a 30-day trial.
Listen, America, come closer. You in your home, and you speeding along the highways or riding the trains and skyways. Listen wherever you are. We bring you good news.
Looking at the menu here at the diner. Turkey, check. Mashed potatoes, check. Yams, check. Buns, check, I assume, with a pat of cold butter. Lefse. Your choice of pies. I choose all of the above. Thank you very much. $1.98, that's a good price. That's a really good price. Of course, you don't know how big the portions are, do you? But does it matter, really, how big the portions are on Thanksgiving? I don't think so. Now, as long as you have the constituent elements themselves arrayed separately, it doesn't matter. You could have a turkey piece the size of a postage stamp. You could have a splash of gravy, a jot of mashed potatoes, a tittle of yams, and tiny little pie slices themselves, only a couple of micrometers thin, and it wouldn't matter. If you just had that and looked at it, you would know that that is a Thanksgiving dinner. It wouldn't be the same if you mashed them all up in a blender and drank it through a straw. That wouldn't count. If they somehow had managed to make every one of these individual flavors, and when we're talking about Thanksgiving, we're not so much talking about individual flavors, are we? As much as all the brown, soft, mushy things mashed together. But if you took each of these individual flavors and chemically isolated them and turned them into some sort of patch that you could slap in your chin or your shoulder blade and absorb the sensation, the endorphins, it wouldn't be the same either. You have to look at it, see the elements arrayed, appreciate, give thanks, dig in. And if they're not big enough to make you waddle away from the table feeling as though you've got to find the couch before you drop to your knees, all the better, frankly. It's for thanks. It's not for gluttony. Hi, folks. Welcome to the diner. I'm James Lilac, sitting here in my accustomed place with the long boomerang pattern from market counter, the old diner out on old Highway 23, but I'd say 18 and a half minutes wherever you happen to be from here now, whatever that means. It may be a little bit longer today, though. There could be holiday traffic. And the reason that there's a menu for Thanksgiving at all at the diner, I suppose, has to do with holiday traffic. Really, when you think about it, there's nothing as sad as a menu in a restaurant offering Thanksgiving dinner. At its worst, you think of somebody who has no place else to go and feels compelled to consume the basics by themselves. The weight of existential dread accumulating around them. Gathering shroud. Or you think of a happy family that is there having Thanksgiving out because their house burned and that's not very happy either way. The trucker, a man who's making his way across the highways and byways delivering the mainstays, the things that people need. 6 days on the road and he's going to make it home tomorrow. Unfortunately, it's Thanksgiving and he's got to have something. In those situations, you'd like to think that the family would wait, right? But can you do that? Can you really do that? Can you have Thanksgiving on a Friday? There has to be some sort of calendrical self-delusion that goes on that I don't think people are capable of. Thanksgiving is Thursday. That's all there is to it. You can eat the same things on Friday. Indeed, some people do. Indeed, people do willingly, knowingly, that what they are consuming on Friday is the identical thing that they had on Thursday, except that no gratitude is required previous to consumption. Nobody ever looks at all of the tools, the trappings, the emblems of Thanksgiving and says, on Friday when they have those leftovers, all right, everybody, heads down. Let me read this editorial from the Wall Street Journal about the pilgrims. And I know we did it yesterday, but come on. These are the sentiments, ideas, and concepts associated with these basic foodstuffs here arrayed like this on this week in November. So just because we gave thanks yesterday, does that mean we are obligated then to just take them for granted today? I mean, is that what Friday is? Is Friday taking it for granted day because you had it fresh the day before and it's been in the fridge for 24 hours? I don't know. I just don't anymore. If you are wondering perhaps why it is not 1984... as it was last time we were together. Well, that had to do with the Cray breaking, as you know, downstairs in the basement. The knob came off, the knob that adjusts the time of the date, so I couldn't really get it. But what I did was I found a pliers and just grabbed the knob and turned it that way until I got to the proper year, 2013. The knob as a channel changer, the knob as a means of resetting your settings... The pliers, rather, as a means of resetting the settings knob, is something that I think is lost on generations coming up today. Kids. Kids today with their touch screens. Kids today with their touching everything, getting their smeary little hands all over it. Why, when I was their age, I had a television set that I broke by speed turning the channel. This was how it worked. You had between the channels a certain amount of distance. In the case of Minneapolis, it was 2, 4, 5, 11. Now, you could clunk, clunk between 2 and 4, clunk, clunk between, you know, clunk between 4 and 5. But man, to get from 5 to 11, nobody went clunk, 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 clunk to get to 11. It was brrr, you turned that thing fast. And when you turned it fast, what you did was you put a lot of stress on this piece of metal that was embedded in the knob itself. Now, if you took the knob off, you would see a little pole, a little post, to use the technical electronic terms, that was circular, except that it wasn't. It had part of it carved away, and the part that was carved away and flat fit into the little metal piece there and in right snugly into the knob, so that when you turned it, the knob itself, which resisted, would go against the metal piece and turn. Now, I know this is a rather technical description of this involved. I'll upload some schematics if you'd like them. But what happened essentially when you turned it very fast, brrr, to get from 5 to 11, was that you broke it, essentially. You wore it out, and eventually the knob did nothing. So what you did then, after the knob no longer turned, is what you tilted it upwards for 3-4 months or so to turn the channel until that stopped working, and then you just got a pliers, and you stuck the pliers on the knob, and that's how you turned it. And that's how you knew you were in college. And so to this day, when I pick up a remote and I'm stabbing at it and it doesn't instantly change the channel from number 112 to number 573, you know, I think of the days when I had to use a pliers to get around the informational situation of the cathode ray tube, and I realize how far we've come and, of course, how little ever anybody thinks about the things that we used to have to do, because once we're used to the new thing, the new thing is the way it's always been, and nobody ever sits down at Thanksgiving and says, I'm thankful for remotes that enable me to go from one channel I couldn't care about past 365 channels, three of which I care about because they have old movies in HD, to this channel here, which is playing Brazilian Booty Butt Workout at 3 o'clock in the morning. And I'm not saying I'm going to DVR it, but let's just check it out to see exactly if there's some firming exercises that I could incorporate into my regimen, because after having two pieces of pie, I need them. And who doesn't have two pieces of pie, don't you? Isn't that the thing? It's the one day of the year that you have license to have both kinds of pie. Nobody says you want pumpkin or pecan. Would you like pecan or mince? And they say, pie? And you say, yes. And among certain places, it's understood that you mean, I wish to experience the full panoply of pie options available to me now, thank you, much, with ice cream and whipped cream. And if it's the ice cream with a little vanilla bean flecks in it, which I guess are great somehow, bring it on. Can't wait. Can't wait. But I won't be having it here, and I won't be having it at home. I'll probably stop in a little bit later, though, because you get that antsy feeling, don't you? You guys remember that when you were a kid. If you had Thanksgiving around 2, 3 o'clock, which is what we usually managed to do, depending on, you know, when Grandma and Grandpa got there. What am I saying? Of course they got there exactly on time. They were old. They had nothing else to do but to be there promptly, in the case of Grandma, to be there early so she could help my mother with all of the things. And even though you had two women working away in the kitchen and Grandpa sitting in the living room with a grain belt and a cigarette, old gold, what was his brand? And my dad, you know, talking to him about the crops. It's all I ever remember anybody talking to my grandfather about, essentially, was the crops, which is odd because it's, you know, it's November. So how are the crops doing, Victor? Aren't any. And then they would bring it all out, and there would be the complaints that everything got cold too fast, and that I hope the potatoes aren't very lumpy and the rest of it, and I hope that the gravy isn't very lumpy, and I hope the coffee isn't very lumpy. And then we would eat, and then they would say it's over so fast, and then there would be 7 hours of cleaning up the dishes. What I remember most about those traditions that does not escape to remain to this day in my own household is the relish tray. It was a tray on which you had celery, which is the most useless of all vegetables. As I noted somewhere else in a piece I wrote this week, it's stiff water that comes with its own floss. And the radish. The radish, as I realized later, was the one thing that my father probably could taste out of the entire meal, because years of inhaling petroleum, gasoline, oil, fuel, all the rest of it, as we learned later, completely destroyed his sense of smell and hence his sense of taste, pretty much. And so when he ate a radish, he could feel life again, man. That radish made it through. And I wondered exactly why my mom didn't berate him for dumping as much pepper on the turkey as he did, but now all is clear. Anyway, in those wonderful halcyon days at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock or so, you'd eat, and then you'd talk, and then the relatives would go home, and that was the end of your day. But then you hit the teen years, and you get antsy. You want to get out. I can't take any of this family stuff anymore. You want to get out in the world with your friends, who are fascinating people who get it. Who get it like nobody else does, at least not like mom and dad, man. The rents, they're good people, but they don't get it. So you get in the car, and what do? You drive around looking for a place that's open. And let me tell you, in Fargo, North Dakota, in 1973, 74, 75, wasn't a lot open on Thanksgiving. And now, of course, the stores themselves are opening up their doors, so the employees have their lunch or Thanksgiving dinner at 11 o'clock in the morning, perhaps in tablet or smoothie form, and then run down to serve the people who've got to bust the doors down at 5 o'clock because they might get 25% off a sweater that's been jacked up 37% above the usual 12% markdown. Got to have that. Not as a gift necessarily, but for themselves, as though Black Friday primes the pump and gets you in the mood for expenditures, which you later will turn to other people. But that wasn't the case back then. The idea that a store would be open where you could shop? Oh, we only dreamed of such a day. Why, the very idea that an Embers would be open. Good Lord, if we could have found an Embers restaurant where we could have a cup of coffee and sit there and talk about Zeppelin, man, and music and stuff, that would have been grand. But no, you end up driving around and sort of looking longingly at the stop-and-go super convenience store, which was open until 6. You know, if you went up to it, you could actually feel the dying emanations of a store that had been open on Thanksgiving. Oh, bask in it. So nothing to do but drive around. Nothing to do but drive around, which your parents think, of course, means you're out there smoking dope and or drinking. I wasn't doing any of the sort. Looking for a cup of coffee, which I'm having right now. This is a diner coffee, and it's pretty good. It's actually got a little bit of gravy essence in it. I don't like flavored coffee, but you've got to try gravy macchiato coffee. They froth it with a little cream on the top, and there's a gravy essence to it that adds something to it. I'm going to just set this over here because suddenly it made me extraordinarily nauseated. I almost said nauseous, by the way. That's not true. Nobody feels nauseous. If you feel nauseous, then other people are being nauseated. Nauseous is like poisonous. You know, nobody ever says, oh, I ate some wolfsbane and nightshade. I feel poisonous. No, you feel poisoned. Likewise, you can't feel nauseous, you feel nauseated. But it's past, and I feel much better right now. Which reminds me, ought there not be a Pepto-Bismol component in a Thanksgiving dinner, just as a prophylactic measure? Why not give everybody a nice little shot glass of Pepto-Bismol, which I find a completely and utterly pleasant thing to consume, by the way. That's why I really never mind when I have to hit the Pepto. Have to hit the pink. It reminds me of my grandfather, again, to go back to the guy who sat in the front room with a beer and an old gold, and I always see him as having a hat on at all times. Always. And I always imagine him bald as well. It's odd how these things happen, isn't it? But there he was, sitting bald-headed with a hat on, smoking his old gold. I'm not sure he actually smoked them at all. I think he just lit them. Because we used to always point out, Grandpa, your ash. Grandpa, Grandpa, you're ash. And he would look down between his first two fingers, and there would be a cigarette which would have 2 inches of ash on it because he lit it and forgotten about it. And he would ever so slowly, with a hand that was not yet trembling, move it over to the floor ashtray. And these were the days of floor ashtrays. A man had a pewter lighter that you could use as a murder weapon and a floor ashtray. It looked like an ornate dumbbell. And he would ever so gently tap it on the edge, and the whole column would fall. Grandpa, you're ash. And my mother hated smoking in the house, but she would set it on an ashtray for her father. And so just imagine Grandpa there doing that. And I think of him in terms of Pepto-Bismol, not because he made me nauseated, but because the smell of smoke to me as a child was a warm childhood memory. Nobody in my family smoked, but it never bothered me when anybody else did. I found it a fascinating odor. If I'd had a liver on it 24/7, different story. But as it was sort of a strange, exotic tang to have in the household atmosphere. So there's Grandpa, right? And he's got his beer, and he's got his cigarette unsmoked with a column of ash on it, and his hat on, and bald-headed. And in the shape-shifting memories of childhood, in which he plays a large figure, because he was an interesting man, we're playing Hide the Thimble, where he would hide a thimble, essentially. And then the kids would run around, and he would tell where you were in proximity to the sewing implement by saying hot or cold. If you won, you were rewarded with a peppermint lozenge, one of those hard things that you can get in bags. That he ate, that you know, Grandma had Brock's candy, hard ribbon candy, which sat in a bowl, and you could pick it. You could pick up one piece of ribbon candy, and the entire block would come out of the bowl because it's just been sitting there since 1957. And circus peanuts, yeah, she bought those. But the peppermint lozenges. So to this day, the flavor of Pepto-Bismol reminds me of the flavor and the hue of the peppermint lozenges that Grandpa handed out when we were playing Hide the Thimble, hot or cold. Now, if they could just dust, add a little ash flavor to the Pepto-Bismol, I'd be right back in Harwood, North Dakota in the early 60s, waiting for the color television set to warm up and looking at the bubble lamps on the Christmas tree, the evergreen they cut down from the forest. It's a wonderful time of the year, isn't it? Let us see what's on the jukebox. I doubt it's going to be anything Thanksgiving-related because I don't know if you've noticed, but it's just not a lot of Thanksgiving songs. Oh, turkey breast, oh, turkey... No. You know, oh, roll all ye lefts. There's just nothing. Because it's about food and gratitude, and you can't sing an awful lot about food, and gratitude is the sort of thing that gets boring after a while if you're singing about it. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Thanks a lot. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Thanks a lot. For the Constitution and property rights. So all you're really reduced to with Thanksgiving is songs about the poor turkey. The animate creature that is decapitated, gutted, shorn of its plumage, and roasted in an inferno for our pleasure. And we thank him for it. So I imagine that whatever the man has put in the jukebox here is going to be turkey-centric. Shall we avail ourselves here? I know. Let's go to N29. Yeah. As I was a-going down the road with a tired dame and a heavy bum, bum. What? What happened? In the hay. Did he burp? Roll him up, twist him up, I took a haul. Hit up a tune called Turkey in the Straw. Has anybody ever actually seen a turkey in the straw or the hay? I don't think they'd like it. It's not their natural habitat. Well, we fired our guns and the British kept a coming. The word tells many as the word tells a whore. Well, we fired our guns and they commenced to run it. All the way down to the Gulf of Mexico. Turkey in the straw. Oh, oh, oh. Turkey in the hay. Hey, hey, hey. Roll them up, twist them up, I took a haul. Hit up a tune called Turkey in the Straw. That one had a curious skip to it, but you get the point. Turkey in the straw. I have the fear that every song that's going to play in the jukebox for the rest of the night is going to be Turkey in the Straw. Which isn't really a Thanksgiving tune when you think about it. Unless, of course, your turkey has come packed in artisanal, locally sourced straw. In which case, I'm sure that the Food section editors of several metropolitan daily newspapers would approve. Let's see what else we have here. Let us try.
Happy Turkey Day!
Ah, breathy white people's chorus. Didn't see you back there. Yes, I'm right back at you. I echo the sentiment, except to edit it slightly and to note that I hate with every fiber of my being the phrase Turkey Day, because it robs the event of its spiritual meaning, of its civic religion, if you will, the essence of Thanksgiving, of gratitude, and reduces it down to a burden, consumption, and gluttony, right? So could you, is there another way you could put that?
You piss me off!
Yes. Well, work on it. Something will come to you. A synonym for Turkey Day. What could it possibly be? Put your heads together. Not literally. That looks weird.
Eight of them back there in that booth. All right, here. Shall we find ourselves another little tune to play here? Something Thanksgiving-related, i.e. turkey-centric? Let's go to B4.
Turkey rhubarb, turkey rhubarb, turkey rhubarb, I sell. I ain't coming here from Turkey to make you all well. Don't you all know me, oh, me name it is Dan. For I am the celebrated turkey rhubarb man. Turkey rhubarb, turkey rhubarb, turkey rhubarb, I sell. I ain't coming here from Turkey to make you all well. Don't you all know me, oh, me name it is Dan. For I am the celebrated turkey rhubarb man.
Well, I find it highly unlikely that everyone would know him if he was from Turkey. I mean, granted, somebody from Turkey would stand out in medieval England, I guess. Fame would spread. Well, you can't say far and wide, because most people never got about 4 or 5 miles away from their place of birth, which limits the ability for the legend of Turkey Rhubarb Dan to spread throughout Albion. But apparently rhubarb had some medicinal value then. Of course, they probably all did. You know, there's a shanty out there somewhere about Sicilian celery Sheila or something. Now that she was from Australia, she'd be from Australia, wouldn't she? Sure. So that would be the, what's an S city for Sydney celery Sheila. There you go. But of course, they didn't know about Australia at the medieval period in England. No, that would only make sense after England had used it as a depository for criminals. So, no. And I can't see that anybody would really take the advice of somebody who'd returned from a penal colony talking of the medicinal value of celery, which is highly unlikely to be the sort of crop you'd invest in a country which has large arid patches. I mean, celery is fairly water-intensive, isn't it? I mean, it's got to require a lot of water to get that much water in it, is what I'm saying. So you wouldn't want to grow something so unrewarding as celery. Anyway, rhubarb pie was a fixture of our Thanksgivings, as well, as I recall now. And I never had it. I never understood it, and I'll tell you why. And I'm sure it's delicious, but to this day I can't, because rhubarb, as I understood it, was this weird purplish crop in the backyard that we had. We had about 4 or 5 rhubarb bushes, plants, and they were just these huge things with fleshy stalks and these big leaves, and it was rhubarb. It was RH, which made it even weirder. So the idea of this thing that you would eat the rhubarb was strange. But of course, it had sugar in it. It had sufficient sugar to any substance. Why did nobody ever come up with celery pie? If somebody had taken celery pie and leveraged the crunch factor, right, which is an integral part of pecan pie, am I not right? I mean, pecan pies themselves are the pecans are yielding to the tooth. They're not hard. They don't fight you, but they certainly provide an element of stiffness that's not present in a pumpkin pie. So if you'd taken celery and really soaked it in sucrose water and rum, shall we say, for 3 weeks, and then put that in a pie and ladled it with some more sugar and put some ice cream on it, kids would be begging for celery pie. I hope Mom makes the celery pie this year. It's the best. Could I have celery pie for my birthday? No, it's just a special treat. But maybe someday I'll give you celery for lunch if you're... Gosh, Mom, celery, that's keen. Yeah, well, maybe I should have had rhubarb in its sugared form in my life. Lord knows what culinary horizons would have opened up to me. I also understand that rhubarb is a term used in theater to indicate crowd sounds, crowd conversations. You want to have a crowd milling around sounding confused or agitated, they all say, rhubarb, 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 rhubarb. I don't know if it's true or not. But if so, I would guess that scene would have to be cut short at some point because eventually everyone's rhubarbs are going to line up. They're going to synchronize, and the audience is going to be looking at this scene wondering why all of a sudden a bunch of strangers on this street scene are chanting the word rhubarb at our protagonists. I wonder what they used back in Shakespearean times. Something they didn't seem to have as many vegetables as we did. So, you know, leek, leek, leek. No, I couldn't bet leek. Well, if Anthony Burgess were here, I'd ask him, but of course he's dead, and he probably wouldn't answer anyway. He'd give me a contemptuous glare and stub out his Schimmelpenninck cigar and start talking to somebody more interesting. That's the problem with having idols who are just absolutely brilliant. You fear that they would look upon you with contempt. I did speak with Burgess once on the phone, but he was a promotional tour, so I think he was being nice. I seem to remember that there was a piece in the New Yorker magazine that Martin Amis wrote about him and played him as an absolute jackass. An intellectual, high, towering intellect who was nice to absolutely nobody. And later, I understand that these Amis profiles were revealed to be, what's the word I'm looking for? Made up, that's it. But still, the image stuck with me. But Burgess, what an incredible writer. He wrote a book called Nothing Like the Sun, which is about Shakespeare, and it's written in the tongue of Shakespeare, the tongue, the times, and the tone, and the timbre, and it's just absolutely wonderful. And if only there were somebody to read it to you, but no, alas and alack, like much of Burgess's work, it can't be found. Clockwork Orange, however. If you've seen the book, if you've read the book, if you've seen the movie, that's one thing, but it's another to actually hear it spoken with all the nadsat, the lingo, read by somebody who knows his way around the script. And if you want to hear it, well, you can go to audible.com, and you can get it for free, as a matter of fact. You can get a free 30-day trial at audible.com and a free book to pick up and read. It doesn't have to be a big, heavy, weighty tome. It can be something light. It can be a little snippet. It can be a podcast. Whatever. Free. audiblepodcast.com/thediner. audiblepodcast.com/thediner. Don't you love those commercials where the guy has the 1-800 number and repeats it four times? audiblepodcast.com/thediner. And go there to say thanks to supporting this. Not supporting the diner itself. I mean, this place, of course, is a business. But me, I mean, gas coming to and fro, you know, tends to add up. Well, we thank Audible, and of course, I have been sitting here drinking coffee for some time, so if you'll excuse me for a moment, we'll be back right after this message.
It's National Happy Holidays to Everyone from Jell-O Week.
Tell everybody you know, and don't let the week go by without J-E-L-L-O.
This is Don Wilson with holiday greetings and a holiday hint. For special meals with a special twinkle, serve Jell-O for dessert. It's so beautiful and bright, so refreshingly light after a rich, festive dinner. Happy holidays, everyone, from
J-E-L-L-O.
The 1958 Edsel. When you see it, you are sure it's the Edsel. When you drive it, then you know. It's the newest car in the world by far. The engine loaded with go, go, go. When you're out on the highway, the Edsel makes it fun to be alive. When you were in the Edsel, you want to drive, want to drive, want to drive.
New in the way it looks, the way it rides, the way it drives. The Edsel, with exclusive new Teletouch Drive, puts the shift buttons in the center of the steering wheel. Its big, safer brakes adjust themselves automatically. And its big, new V8 Edsel engines put more usable power at your command than you have ever known. See, drive, and priced. 1958's only all-new car. And you'll find out you can afford the car you just fell in love with.
See your Edsel dealer, take a drive today.
This is the year to get out of that rut and into the most elegant car of your lifetime.
Mancini. Perfect post-prandial music for settling back in the lazy boy and dealing with the meal. Letting yourself slip into a tryptophan fog. And a few of you are probably saying, stop talking about the tryptophan. That has nothing to do with it. And it doesn't, really. I mean, there may be some of it in there, but really, I think maybe the reason that people feel sleepy after a large meal is that the majority of the blood in their body is in the stomach working on that bolus of bird. By the way, nobody ever says preprandial. Has anybody ever told you, I say, how about a preprandial drink? No, everything prandial is always post, and nothing is ever prandial, for that matter. It's a word meaning relating to lunch or dinner. But nobody ever says, well, it's prandy time for us now, isn't it? No, it's always post-prandial by people who think that that's some sort of drink. Oh, I'd like a prandial. Yeah, sure. Just light. Just don't. It's like a cordial. For a while there, a drink was a cordial. And if you ever went to a restaurant today, say Applebee's, and said, "I'd like what do you have in the way of cordials for my prandial?" They would think that you were talking about some sort of commercial unguent that you would apply to your privates. A cordial for my prandial, if you don't mind, sir. Prefer that you keep your prandial to yourself. Well, before we settle the bill and go, and I did not have the turkey special, by the way, because it's not Thanksgiving yet, and that's something to be had at home. And there has to be a couple of days passing between Thanksgiving before you can have it at a restaurant again. It just doesn't seem right to have it the day before. It spoils everything. It's like opening up your presents on the 23rd. So before we go, let's see what else there might be on the jukebox. I'm going to go to F1.
Come on, let's turkey trot. Let's jet it while it's hot. This dance is really fine. It stood the test of time. Trotting and all your cares will be forgotten. Come on, let's turkey trot. Let's turkey trot. Let's give it all we've got. Yes, all we've got. And when the dance is.
Well, as it turns out, a lot of people here at the diner are doing the turkey trot right now. They're getting up and they're heading toward the rooms in the back because management just came out and said that there was a report of a salmonella outbreak in the birds that they have been using here. So, yeah, there's a lot of the turkey trot going around, alas.
Gobble diddle it, gobble gobble diddle it.
So I didn't have any, though, and I hope you didn't either. And I hope everything that you have for Thanksgiving is absolutely wonderful. And if I may ask, Breathy White People's Chorus, did you come up with something other than Turkey Day for this event?
Happy Thanksgiving!
All right. And the same to you. I'm James Lilix. This has been The Diner for 2013 Thanksgiving. Thank you for showing up, and I'll see you down the road.
Poor little old turkey!
The Diner is brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio information and entertainment. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Go to audiblepodcast.com/The Diner and get a free audiobook and a 30-day trial.